the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, some important deadlines are coming up for Medicare. Joining me as my special guest is David Sein. He had a distinguished career as regional administrator out of San Francisco for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. Currently, he's senior vice president of the Gorman Health Group. And David, let's talk about this enrollment period that's coming up here. I believe it's October 15th to December 7th. Let's talk about the implications of that, who needs to be aware of it, and also about what happens when you turn 65.
Right. And people often conflate the issues of enrolling for the Medicare program initially with this annual period that is associated with making changes in your coverage. And so with respect to the former, which is important, people become eligible for Medicare typically when they're 65 or when they've been on Social Security disability for 48 months. And in both of those cases, if you're going along and you're paying into Social Security, they're going to notify you. But then there are people that choose not to take Medicare at 65, perhaps because they're working and they have health insurance. Down the road, when those individuals decide that they want to drop or they lose that other coverage and they want Medicare, they have to tell the Social Security Administration that they want to do that because there's no way that the government would know. And you don't want to end up with a break in coverage, particularly if you're over 65. I'm past 60 myself, and, you know, our health insurance is very important to us as we get further along in life, because we're going to get a lot further along if we can take care of what our problems are. The other issue at hand, of course, coming in October, is this ability to make changes in the kinds of Medicare coverage that you have.
Let's talk about that, because what kind of changes and what options can you give our listeners? What are some of the things that you have the flexibility to change once you originally signed up for Medicare? And let's say you decided that what you signed up for, you want something different.
So what I call Medicare Classic and what the Congress dubbed Original Medicare is the program that was created when we were all a bit younger that had this two basic parts that was built on the model of the Blue Cross plans and Blue Shield plans that many of us knew at that time that our parents had, where there was a hospital insurance or Part A, and there was what's called supplemental medical insurance or Part B. The hospital insurance is the thing that you're paying for in your paycheck with that FICA tax, along with the Social Security tax. And then when you're eligible for Medicare, that's something that you're entitled to. That's why it's called an entitlement. And you're entitled to have that, and you don't pay any more for the coverage itself after that time. On the other hand, for that supplemental insurance or Medicare Part B, there is a monthly premium. And that monthly premium for most people is $104.90 now. But for people that are new into the program and make a little more money, that goes up higher. And we really must talk about that later, because that's a very important thing to think about. So Part B, your premium essentially is 25% of the cost of the program, and the taxpayers are picking up the other 75%. So that Part B, that's the thing that you have to elect when you come into Medicare, because if you don't and you do it later, you can get a bad financial result from that. So that's the basic Medicare program, and that's not what this open season is about at all. The open season is about things that can be added on to that basic benefit as a matter of choice. And those are the things that Congress, in their statutes, dubbed Part C and Part D. But I find that quite confusing, because if something had A, B, C, and D, I'm thinking of a pie with four slices. It isn't like that. Part C of Medicare is essentially an option to replace Part A and B with a private benefit. And that's been around for a long time. It's called Medicare Advantage now. It was called Medicare Plus Choice in the past. And long ago, it was called Medicare Risk or TEFRA Risk when it was a much smaller program. Now it's a big program. It's 30% of the people in Medicare. It's 40% of the people out here where I am in California, and 50% in places like Los Angeles and Miami, where there are a lot of plans to choose from. So that's the deal, where you throw your Medicare card in the basket and pick up a card that says Kaiser Health Insurance, AARP, United Health Insurance, and you now have your hospital benefit, your physician benefit, coming from that private health plan. They have a separate product that's their Medicare product. Nonetheless, it is a private product, and you're entitled to all the things that Medicare covers, and they may cover some additional things for an additional premium, but they must cover everything that Medicare covers. That's Part C. That's the thing that you get to choose. You get to choose to join that at this time of year, to unjoin that this time of year, and you get to switch among the many plans that might be offered where you live. So A, B, C, D, the final part, D, that's the prescription drug part, which is kind of a different kettle of fish. The Congress made that program quite different, where there's a federal subsidy, and you can choose from a number of drug plans, and depending upon your income and the plan you choose, your expenditure for some people could be $0. The average expenditure is around $30 a month. And then there are more expensive plans that have more comprehensive coverage. So those Part C, Medicare Advantage plans, those Part D, prescription drug plans, are the things that are up in the air from October 15th until I think it's December 7th. It's a relatively short window, so you want to think about that as soon as the information becomes available to make choices if you're in the market for choices. And one last thing I'll add is Kaiser Family Foundation just published a study that 1 in 10 Medicare beneficiaries takes advantage of this open season, and typically almost all of them go for a lower premium. So the opportunity for your listeners, or our listeners today, is to think about, you know, would I want to consider changing my coverage to get a saving or to meet a health need that maybe I did not have before for a particular drug, or maybe I want to go to a different provider.
And David, let's say you chose B and then later on you find, hey, you're having difficulty either with your physician, like when you had a PPO plan, and you decide you want to shift from B to C. Can you do that? And how easy is it to get done?
Okay. So just make it clear for everyone. When you're not in one of these private plans, you have Medicare Part A and B, you can go to pretty much any doctor. There are a handful of doctors out there that don't take Medicare at all, but for the most part, any participating doctor that wants to take care of you, you get to go to. So you have complete freedom of choice, a tremendous value. If you can afford the supplemental insurance or to pay the 20%, it's a great deal. That's a good thing to have if you can sort of afford it. On the other hand, if you choose one of these Part C Medicare Advantage private plans, you're generally going to be limited to the network of physicians, hospitals, imaging centers, whatever that they have set up for you. In some cases, you can go out of the network for an additional cost. But the general thought about this Part C program that I would say to people is it's really something for savers. It's something where if you're comfortable with the providers that they use, you're probably going to spend a little less in total if you're in that plan. But you have to be comfortable with those providers. And that's where, you know, when people get older and they have problems that they didn't anticipate, they might want to have a little bit more flexibility.
So let's talk about something else now, too. Even though whether you get Medicare Advantage or you go with Parts A and B or even D, Medicare, Dave, let's talk about how much Medicare covers, because there's something else you also need, and there's so many varieties to choose from, which is a Medigap policy to supplement what Medicare doesn't cover. So tell our listeners what Medicare doesn't cover and the various different Medigap policies and why they may be important, especially, for example, you're retired and you're traveling overseas.
That's a very good point. Medicare is an American program, and your Medicare benefits are only good in the United States, Alaska, Hawaii, and, you know, with rare exceptions, an emergency, right, you know, around the border. But generally, that's right. It's an American program. And so that's one thing to consider. Some of those Part C plans actually do offer an offshore benefit of a temporary nature. The issue is really the way the program was conceived. The Congress wanted the beneficiaries in the program to have skin in the game so that they would be efficient consumers. And so on the Medicare Part A side, there's a hospital deductible. I don't know the exact number today. It's around $1,500 when you go in the hospital. And then after that, your hospital stay is covered for a number of days. And if you're in the hospital for a very long time, you may have to pay for parts of that. But on the Part B side, after an initial deductible, which is somewhere around $166 today, after you pay the first $166, Medicare will pay 80% of the Medicare charge, approved charge, if you go to a provider that accepts Medicare assignment, and you're responsible for the other 20%. Well, that can be very expensive because in a single episode, you may have a surgeon, an anesthesiologist, a pathologist, a number of different practitioners all sending you bills, and you're paying 20% of all of those things. And even though Medicare is keeping those prices nominally lower than private payers might be paying for those services, it's still a big exposure. And that's the thing that people purchase these so-called supplemental or Medigap policies, because they cover that gap that Medicare doesn't pay for. There are several different ones that are delineated by letters, and those letters are standard throughout the United States. It's something that the National Association of Insurance Commissioners have done. I think F is the most common one. So obviously the most expensive one covers everything, and then you don't have to worry, you don't have any expense if you get sick. Then there are others that are not as generous, but they're less expensive to buy. So it's really, you know, how much of a gamble do you like to take? And the most important thing to remember is in most of the states, if you don't elect that Medigap policy when you sign up and you want it later, they could charge you more for it or they could turn you down because of your health status. This is not something that the Affordable Care Act, that the Obamacare law helps you with. That law says nothing about Medigap. So while, you know, under 65 people that don't have Medicare now have guaranteed issue of insurance through the state exchanges and so forth, people over 65 that have Medicare aren't eligible for that. And so they want to choose wisely whether they want to do Medigap or Part C or none of the above. Some people do none of the above because they can't afford it.
And David, you know, just looking at statistically, it seems like there's one program that stands out in Medigap insurance above the others. That's Plan F. And it looks like the second most popular is C. Any reason can you tell that why these have become so popular? Is it because they're comprehensive coverage?
Yeah, my recollection is that F is the most comprehensive and then C is a bit less, but it's still a pretty good value. The others, I think, don't cover as many things. And the specific offerings do vary a little bit. These things are all in the Medicare and You handbook that every Medicare beneficiary will have sent to their household prior to October 15th. And that book is valuable. You want to keep it around all year. You can also get it online at Medicare.gov and download it if you want. But I would recommend to people that they keep that book around and consult that because it's all in there. I mean, this really is a part of financial planning, and that's what I always try to make people pay attention to. This is as much a financial issue as a health issue, because if you have a health problem, there are people that can take care of your health problem, but you've got to figure out how to pay for it. And you want to do that before you have the problem. So these Medigap policies, most people that buy Medigap are more affluent, and so they can afford to buy the full coverage, just like people that will buy, you know, warranties on their automobiles or washing machines or whatever. I don't buy any of those things, but some people do. On the other hand, folks that can't afford that Medigap premium but don't want to go bare typically will go shopping in that Medicare Part C, Medicare Advantage arena, where your out-of-pocket expense is usually limited to an amount rather than a percent. And consumers that have less to spend like that. They like that they're going to go to the doctor, it's going to be $20 or $25, and that's it. Whereas if you're Medicare Part B, you visit the doctor's office, you know, all sorts of things can pop up, you know, co-charges for things can get kind of expensive. So that's the other way to think about it, is look at this Part C. If you're coming into Medicare and you do the Part C Medicare Advantage, and then down the road you don't like it, you have a shot to go back and get a Medigap policy. You get one more bite of the apple of a free opening for that.
And David, I want to go back to signing up. Let's say I'm age 65, or I'm going to be 65, so this open enrollment period is coming up. But let's say I forgot about it. Let's say I didn't realize I had to sign up for it, and I'm still within that 12-month period. Talk about, you're not working, so you're not covered by a health plan, and you don't sign up for Medicare at age 65, and let's say you wait a year or two because, I don't know, you're either healthy or you just weren't aware of the rules. Talk about the penalties and increase in premiums that are permanent.
So this is the other enrollment period that Medicare has. It's called the general enrollment period. And this is for people who were eligible and didn't sign up. So for those folks, they have between January 1st and March 31st of each year to enroll. And that's the only time of the year that they can enroll, and the enrollment isn't effective until July the 1st. So one of the issues about getting into this space where your other coverage gone and you're not in Medicare, you're going to spend this period where you're not covered, which isn't a great thing. And so that's the first thing to consider. And the premium increase is the following. Essentially, if you join Medicare when you're first eligible, you're not as much risk to the program as someone that joins the program later. So in theory, everybody pays the same premium. The younger Medicare beneficiaries are balancing out the older beneficiaries that are typically more expensive. And so the program will ask you to pay more for your coverage if you start later. And I don't have those exact numbers. I'm just looking at them now. But what I can tell you from people that have had it happen to them, it can get very expensive because it goes up. It's maybe like 10% initially. And you're going to pay that additional amount for the rest of your life. It's not just a penalty that you pay in the beginning. And I have had many seniors come to me and say, this should be yellow tape across the front of that Medicare handbook. Don't miss the open enrollment. Don't miss enrolling when you're eligible. And it happens, and it happens a lot. When I used to go out and do events at the church or, you know, a shopping center or whatever, there'd always be somebody there that happened to. And it's avoidable, and Social Security and Medicare don't want it to happen to you, but they have no way of knowing that your coverage has changed after the initial enrollment period. And the same thing is true for the prescription drug coverage. If you don't take that when you're first eligible, it also gets more expensive later and stays more expensive.
Let me take another scenario, David. Let's say I'm 66 years old. I'm working at a company. The company provides me health care benefits. So as I understand, I don't have to sign up for Medicare. So let's say it's a year later. I'm now 66. I decide I want to retire. When do I sign up for Medicare? Do I have to wait to an open enrollment period, or can I go immediately and sign up for Medicare because now I don't have coverage with the company?
Right. So Medicare doesn't want you to go bare, and there is something called a special enrollment period, and that is where if you're working or you have coverage through a family member or whatever during the time that you're now eligible for Medicare and that coverage ends, you have this special enrollment period, which is 8 months long, during which you can sign up for Part A and or Part B. It starts immediately the month after your employment ends or the insurance ends. There's no late enrollment penalty. And again, you have 8 months to do this. But it's going to be effective the first day of the next month. So you don't want to wait until you're bare, you know, to go out shopping for a coat. You want to be ready for the cold weather, you know, before it hits.
And let's talk about something you made reference to earlier. There's different tiers of Medicare pricing based on your income. You've got the standard rate, and talk about the hold harmless clause where certain people will not get that increase, others will.
Sure. I'm going to try and make this as simple as I can. If Social Security checks don't go up in a particular year, then the people that are collecting Social Security and paying into Medicare can't experience a premium rise, even if Medicare costs have gone up. And that's happened now for 3 years. So the premium that people that were in Social Security paying for their Part B out of their Medicare has stayed at $104.90 for 3 years. And by all accounts, I imagine that it's thought that this is likely to happen in the coming year. On the other hand, if you sign up today for Part B or your higher income, the premium today is actually $121.80 a month. So that hold harmless provision is made so that, you know, the widow or widower that's living on their Social Security check doesn't go up. They don't have any money to pay more money for their Medicare. So they're protected. When it does eventually go up, then obviously some of it will get eaten by Medicare. Now, here's the thing that people just don't know about because it hasn't been around forever and people maybe don't pay attention to the change here. And that is this. If you make up to $85,000 a year, those numbers that we just talked about, the $104 or the $121, that's the Medicare Part B premium. That sounds pretty affordable to people, you know. But let's say we have a little bit more income as we get older and we make $85,000 a year. Now, our premium is $170. And if you're husband and wife, you're both paying the premium. Now, if the income goes up to $107,000, it goes up to $243,000, $160,000, $316,000, and at $214,000 a year, you're paying $389 a month for Medicare Part B. Or if you're a couple, you're paying, you know, almost $800. That's a lot of money when you're paying for that and you're buying the supplement on top of it. And so, you know, that's a change that, you know, I guess it happened a number of years ago, and it's, they've added onto it a few times. So while Part A continues to be an entitlement program and everybody gets it and everybody gets the same thing, Part B is now an income-adjusted program where for the poorest people, the states can pay their premium for them if people are eligible for Medi-Cal or Medicaid. And then the average run of people are in a premium around $100, but higher-income people pay quite a bit more.
So, David, given that there's various aspects to the different programs of Medicare from Parts A to Part D, C with the Advantage program, and then the plethora of different Medigap policies that one needs to examine depending on what you can afford and what you need, what can a potential Medicare participant do in advance? In other words, you mentioned this booklet. Is there places they can go on the government website where they can familiarize themselves with the different programs and the aspects of each program and things that they need to know? In other words, to become informed so they really make a good decision. And would you also recommend working with an advisor?
So the one mitigating factor that we have to deal with is the identity and prices of the choices for 2017 won't be known until just before the enrollment period begins. The calendar for the plans to bid and the work that has to be done to set the prices and all that is tight, so they don't have the information way in advance. Somewhere in early October, though, they will publish that, and that's when the handbooks will come out. And I would say for the average Joe or the average Jane, this is a lot to bite off and try to figure out. And I think that people could end up making a poor choice simply because they don't understand all of it. So I do think having some kind of an advisor is a very good idea. And if you have, you know, your family attorney you work with, or you have a financial planner that you work with, or an insurance broker you work with particularly, because they're always knowledgeable about this, that's one approach you can take because you're working with someone that already knows your situation. The next best thing, or a very good thing, is there's a program that the government funds that trains volunteers to help people make this Medicare decision. It's actually funded by those private health plans. They pay a sort of a user fee or a tax. That pays for all the handbooks, and that pays for this health insurance counseling assistance program or state health insurance program. They're administered by the states. There's one in every state, every county. And these people are pretty well trained, but they get busy because the open enrollment period is small. So if you have your old handbook, you'll have the number for the local help there. If you don't, if you call the 1-800-MEDICARE number, which is a 24-hour-a-day number, they can give you a local number to arrange to have a counseling session. And the smart person would do that before the open season, and then during the open season, you'd have your appointment. It's kind of like my 15-year-old wants a learner's permit, and it takes like 2 months to get an appointment at the DMV. So you want to do it 2 months ahead of time. Of course, he's eager to drive, and I'm not eager for him to drive, but that's, you know, it's the same kind of thing. Make an appointment with those health insurance people is great. Or if you like to do things yourself, you've got the handbook. Medicare's got a great website, medicare.gov, where you can compare the plans on quality and price. You can put in your information, and it'll tell you what plan's the cheapest. So there's a lot of different ways to do it.
Well, listen, David, if our listeners would like to find out more about your group that you work with, how can they do so, please?
Well, our group really isn't a customer-facing organization. What we do is really help those Medicare Advantage and prescription drug plans, you know, to meet the government requirements and to scope out new possibilities. People that have, you know, questions about Medicare and the consumer-facing parts of Medicare, the 1-800-MEDICARE is the first place to go, or your Medicare handbook, because your handbook will bring you to local resources. And again, if you work with an insurance broker or financial planner in your family, that's a good way to go, because these numbers that we talked about earlier are really significant and really figure into your budget when you're thinking about what 2017 is going to look like.
Well, listen, David, as always, I want to thank you for coming on the program. And remember, if you're listening to this program, that open enrollment period opens up October 15th, runs to December 7th. And also, if you want to make those changes to your existing Medicare program, this is the time to do so. Dave, thanks so much for joining us on the program.
It was a pleasure.
Well, like anything, Jim, I mean, this includes government programs such as Medicare. You need to know what's going on and make some intelligent decisions rather than just picking willy-nilly. But at least you know that once a year you can go in and change things if you need to.
Well, and that's right. So once again, folks, this open enrollment period comes up starting October 15th. You might want to go to the Medicare website, get your handbook, start perusing it, and at least familiarize yourself with coverage, especially if you've been in the private sector with the program working for a company. You're going to find Medicare just a little bit different. There are a lot more things you need to know about, the different parts, the different Medigap insurance policies. As you heard, David, that's not necessarily guaranteed. It could be what you can afford. All of this. Do your homework, become informed, so you make a better decision. In the meantime, on behalf of John Leffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on our Lifetime Income series. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.